from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking about a grab bag of topics, the most prominent one being about the Discovery Institute, because it really, honestly, like there's a few factors I want to talk about. One guy is getting fired from NASA who wants to sue someone, and guess who's fucking supporting his lawsuit? It'll always be the same people. And I want to talk about the history of this organization. A lot of the shows are going to be dealing with that. But before we talk about this, we're going to be talking about a bunch of other silly topics, like teen girls doing exorcisms and videos from, like, trying to argue that Planned Parenthood is trying to addict people to sex. But before we start, we're going to begin with something kind of somber. It is a bit somber. It ties in with something that's happened in Ryan's life, and it deals with death. Deals with the realities of death as an atheist, and unfortunately what's happened recently is that a friend of Ryan has recently perished, and I think I'll let Ryan finish that story.
Yeah, he died over the weekend. We found out on Sunday that he died on Saturday, and obviously, I'm in Montreal, and a lot of my friends are in Ottawa, and he was one of my Ottawa friends.
Well, not just a friend. I mean, you had done some things with him. You were
he used to help me with like one of our biggest supporters back where I used to throw raves, and he was the MC, or I don't know if you call him the MC or the lead singer or like the main, like he was the front man for my old band Slammer Virus, which was like a weird hardcore performance art group.
Well, can you give us an idea of what your performance art was like, Ryan?
Okay, well, here's the deal. I had a mohawk. My buddy Ben was doused and covered in, like, fake blood. Mm-hmm. And Graham would get onto the microphone and just scream at the crowd and call them shit faces and assholes.
People would be smashing things.
Yeah, Graham, we always used to bring in, like, a junk setup that at the end of our set we would completely smash, like,
it's
the computer.
It's performance art.
And, the ravers would get so angry, and this is like, I always said I didn't really care about these people because these were like the hippie raver. People were like, look, people dance in the dance floor in their socks, man. You smash glass monitors, and we like get glass in our feet. I'm like, look, you don't have the right to know if you're not going to wear shoes at a rave that you're not going to step on something you don't want to step on.
It's a rave, man. You might step on a needle.
Here's some advice. If we smash a monitor, put some shoes on. It's like, I'm sorry if our amazingly awesome and intense thing.
Is that what it is?
Well, people used to flip out because it's like a violent act at a big E-tard.
Well, it's violent
party.
Performance art is what it was.
Yeah,
honestly.
It basically was. Yeah. It was.
You wouldn't call it that because that's too gay for you.
You didn't even recognize it at the time. It was just what we were up to. But, like, you know, I guess it's like 7 years down the road looking back at it. That's basically what it was.
It was. It was performance art.
It was fun. It was, you know, in the vein of the Plasmatics. If you've never heard of them, YouTube the Plasmatics. It's like a 70s punk group that used to, like, blow
smash
up cars.
Things, like,
smash things, blow up cars.
Like literally blow up cars on stage. Aside, they had dynamite. Well, not dynamite. I don't know what it was, but it was pretty fucking powerful.
It was. She lit the fuse and threw it into the car and blew it up. And the people at the television station did not seem impressed. So we always kind of took our cues from them. But, he died over the weekend. They think it was sleep apnea, which is something that he had some issues with in the past and stuff. So, but one of the things that kind of came up, you know, on people's Facebooks, you see a lot of RIP, you know.
And, sure, yeah.
And to me, it's like I don't see any real overt religious connotations of rest in peace, but it still kind of comes from that old-timey ancient idea that a person's soul is still around and you just hope that it's going to rest in peace.
Yeah, just rest until you get resurrected, man.
I hope that your spirit, is going to be okay and is going to lie there and it's going to relax. And I've always been like, you know, I've always had a hard time knowing what to say, because if you're not going to say rest in peace, and if you're not going to write like a big mushy like I'm going to miss you thing, then what is there to say?
What is the appropriate response? What is,
and it always it sucks that atheism doesn't have we don't have some kind of atheistic term. Like, I mean, the best that I can come to is Vonnegut's So It Goes. That's about as
that
good
is
as
pretty
I got.
Good.
It's not bad. I mean, but you know, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, considering, you know,
it's Vonnegut.
That one's okay, but it's like we don't have anything else, either fortunately or unfortunately, because God knows if imaginary
knows.
Jesus knows. We don't want the guy who decided that atheists were going to be called brights deciding what we should say when someone dies.
Well, there's no committee, luckily. There's no committee. Although, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention, just sort of offhand, which deals basically with how do atheists deal with death? And I feel like I can never really properly communicate this with a religious person. It's hard to, because they just don't get it. I mean, they come from a world where dealing with death just doesn't actually happen. The way they deal with it is like, oh, you're going to see him again. It's going to be super fun and happy playland. It's not. It's kind of like when you divorce yourself from that delusion, you realize, you know, the thing that made that person him, his brain, the unique collection of neurons that made him him, they're gone. They're not coming back. There's no way to bring it back. It's just sort of like the transientness of human life is no more apparent than when you lose someone. When you're a non-believer, you're just like, oh, shit, life is so cheap. It sucks.
Yeah, and one of our friends was talking about how, you know, he was speaking about it with this girl, and this girl brought up, like, oh, she had just been to her grandfather's Buddhist funeral, and it was not a time for sadness, it was a time for happiness, and this and that.
Yeah,
and
I don't want that shit.
And to a certain degree, it's like, those are the platitudes that kind of make me angry, because, yeah, okay, your 70-year-old grandfather's funeral, you can take a look at the great life that he's led and everything, but where is that in the death of somebody who's 32?
Yeah, he's barely fucking scratched the surface. I mean, especially now. 32 is the new 22. I mean, we're just dumbasses coming out of fucking childhood now. We're a little bit late because we were born in a really complicated world. You know, one that our fucking ancestors would be like, what's going on here? Took us a little bit longer to grow up. And then finally, when you're at that stage, I mean, like, I personally feel at that stage where it's like, oh, that transformation is finally happening. Now is that time. And a person to get robbed of that transformation, I mean, all of a sudden you're just like, I don't want platitudes. I don't want to fucking celebrate. Oh, he's moved on to a new life. No.
Yeah, he really hasn't. That was the book. That was the Book of Graham, and it's like
it was a short fucking
novel. You can celebrate it, and you could remember it fondly and everything else like that, but you still have to recognize death for what it really is, and not this fantasy playground that he's moved on to bullshit.
The see you later, fucking school
I'll
of thought.
See you in heaven, brah.
Here's what's weird, though. You know what I've been singing over the last few days? Eric Clapton's If I Saw You in Heaven, you know? Like, and I sing it because it is really a beautiful song, mm-hmm. But it's total nonsense. It's like, oh, your baby died. Guess what, pal? You know how, actually, if I'm not mistaken, his kid died because he fell out of a window.
Like, that really happened in real life?
I'm pretty sure that's how he died.
That's awful.
That happens quite a bit, by the way. You know, little babies on, like,
ledges and shit,
yeah,
like that?
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah. Oh, I can totally see it.
The horror stories. They're too numerous. I mean, like,
if you
kids
see,
are dumb.
There is literally a horror movie based on that concept of a kid, yeah, called Antichrist. It was, I think it was a Lars von Trier movie. It had Willem Dafoe and some really hot chick.
Oh my
chick
God,
there.
Willem Dafoe is so creepy.
Yeah, I know. And they deal with their kid falling out of a window through like crazy sexual experiments. It's very strange.
How is this a horror movie? This sounds like a sexual thriller.
Yeah, you have to watch it. It's very mentally fucked
up. It's like Color of the Night.
It's basically a descent into madness.
Started with sex. I like it. Is this made in the 90s?
No, it's like 3 or 4 years old.
Really?
Yeah, very well
shot. Is
there
any nipple in it?
Tons.
Really? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my complaint is it's like we don't have casual boobs
anymore. This is a... But don't think it's going to be titillating. Most of it is just disturbing.
Oh. Well, it's William Dafoe anyways. I don't want to see him naked. He's like a goblin. He's literally a goblin.
This is the crash of your child died movies.
Ugh. Yeah, I want to see that one.
Well, I mean,
put that on my to watch list.
This is just another one of those movies where you're like, "That's dour, Ryan," and I'm like, "Yes, this one is."
You watch
dour.
A lot of dour shit, though.
You know what? I watch a lot of serious film.
No, shut the fuck up, man. It's so dour that there are honestly times where, like, you gave me a list of all your movies for me to watch, and I have not watched almost any of it because I'm like, that's depressing. At this time, sir, in my life, the last thing that I need is something depressing. I want to feel happy. You understand that emotion? Do you remember that emotion?
I will burn you some SpongeBob SquarePants. Then.
No, I don't want that. I don't want SpongeBob SquarePants. In fact, I was walking by this mall the other day, and I saw a SpongeBob SquarePants backpack, and I swear to God, SpongeBob looked drunk and high on that backpack, and I'm like, that's pretty messed up.
He's a favorite of ravers for that reason, is that he is...
He's obviously a tweaker.
Obviously, quite clearly. Quite clearly.
He's written for tweakers, probably by a tweaker.
Now, before we roll into, like, your... All of your topics. I did want to mention, you guys were talking about Coney 2012.
We were last show.
In the last show. And I just wanted to
put in your two cents?
I did. I mean, it's because everybody's talking about it right now. And what bugs me about it is it seems like when it comes to the internet, it comes to knowledge, you know, you have people who you know, they see the surface stuff. And then they feel like they have to know, like, the inside track on what's going on behind it. And a lot of people have read a lot of things about Invisible Children, the people behind the video, and they've decided that they've got a much better idea of where it is, of where this situation is, and a lot of criticisms about the
guys
who did it.
Based on very little information about the organization itself.
Exactly. And I just wanted to kind of say that There's some very much back-engineered arguments about the thing that bugs me the most, the stupidest one that I've heard of, is that, oh, that this Lord's Resistance Army problem isn't that big of a problem.
It's not in Sudan anymore. I mean, in Uganda, we should ignore it.
The stupid thing about that is, look, you realize that this is a Lord's Resistance Army, anti-Lord's Resistance Army group. These people...
That's their thing.
That's their thing. Yeah. So the fact that we put this out and people are like, well, that's not the biggest
problem.
They're
not dealing with all the problems in Uganda. Be like,
they're not dealing with all the problems in Africa. Now. They're not dealing with the specific pet problem, pet project that I am interested in, and therefore I think they are stupid. It's like, that's fucking retarded.
I think you're going to actually, if you go back and you listen to the show I recorded with Carissa about it, you would actually find that show enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But you never listen to shows, so you won't know.
I can't even listen to my own podcast. So.
I know. You're like the opposite of vain.
This is one of those things where it's like, I mean, I am not a podcast audience. I understand people.
Oh yeah, you
people,
don't podcast.
People go to the gym. People, you know, going to work. People like back and forth from like
people
point
in
A
Afghanistan
to point B.
Fighting the Taliban.
I sit in my basement all day. I don't go anywhere. I'm on the internet. I listen
really
to music.
Does.
So there's no opportunity for me. Not a quote unquote opportunity. There's no time. I don't listen to podcasts. I'm not a podcast audience. So that's the weird thing about
he understands being almost nothing about podcasts.
Exactly. That's the weird thing about being a podcast voice. But yeah, I just the biggest thing that I can say coming out of it before we move on is just that don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good.
Well, I had a really one of the arguments that I tried to craft last show. Is the fact that, you know, there is a lot of Invisible Children that I, as an atheist, do not like. Number one, they're a bunch of Christians, evangelical Christians, by the way. The founder believes in some profoundly ridiculous things. He believes magic is possible. But here's the thing: the founder is kind of like Steve Jobs, is what I argued last show, where people who believe in the impossible or the weird sometimes are the biggest influencers you could ever imagine because they have a hope that is unreal. They actually live the delusion, and sometimes the people who live the delusion can actually make it almost real. And in a sense, like, the thing that I still admire about Coney 2012 is the fact that it managed to do everything that I was talking about right, where I'm like, people are ready to feel good again. Yeah, that's real. And they capitalized on that. I mean, like, I was bawling my eyes out when I saw that Korean homeless kid video. Because
I didn't see
I
the
feel
Korean
that,
homeless kid
well,
video.
I'll show it to you later.
I was pretty that was pretty upsetting when I was watching the Coney video where they talked about like the kid.
Are you sure?
I don't know
if you're ready for this fucking Korean video then. But the point is, I'm like, I feel primed myself. I feel primed for hope You know, for us to stop being powerless voices and for us to move forward. And I'm actually trying to push, like, as part of the Save Good Atheist campaign, by the way. It's not just Save Good Atheist. You know, like, I need to be hopeful as well in like, the future of things for good atheists. But I think that people need to be hopeful in general. It's like it's a general trend where we're like, hey, you know what? The future's not over. It might be scary, and it might be something we don't want to deal with, but you know what? We should be hopeful because we're a lot smarter, more knowledgeable than we've ever been. Like, why are we freaking out? We have accumulated so much human knowledge and history that I think we can figure it out.
Yeah, I think it's just because in a lot of different ways, you know, we're told that things are different, but they always seem the same. Even like, I mean, take a look at the Arab Spring. It's just the same shit, different fucking leaders. You overthrow your corrupt government. Yay, well, look at this. People are still getting tortured
it's
in
true,
your prisons.
Here's I think, why it's tough for us. It's really difficult for us to see the light at the end of the tunnel, because it turns out that change doesn't really happen within lifetimes, because they're brief, right? What? Changes happen over time, and when you look at the trend of world history, there's every reason to be positive. Like, I'm not joking around here. It's like, I feel like we're all just waiting for all this shit to collapse around us. Be like, oh no, this trend towards peacefulness was a lie. No. No, actually, like, the same reason why I was bawling my ass at that Korean video, or even the Kony 2012, was that actually most people are really decent, they feel empathetic towards others, and this newfound power of being able to connect with other people is real. It's not made up.
And if we can harness that, then that's all for the better. And the more that we learn to do that, the better we'll be off as a society. So long as it doesn't fall in the wrong hands.
Okay, well, speaking of wrong hands, I feel like it's time for us to transition. Oh!
Let's do it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about something that's been, that's sort of like, it's not new news. But what's news about it is the fact that it's kind of like brought to attention, because like anything that involves the law, it takes time, right? What happened was that there was a guy who used to work for the Jet Propulsion Laboratories, which is essentially a division of the Caltech University, which works with NASA. So let me just say that this guy used to work for NASA, so that's the easier way for you to understand this basic problem. His name was David Coppedge, okay? This guy was a team lead, and I wish you could see me putting the quotation marks, because team lead doesn't mean fucking shit in the world of science, but it means things when you don't know anything about it. But yeah, he was a team lead on the Cassini mission. You remember that? When they send that probe over to Saturn, and it took all those really great pictures of the rings and so on and so forth? Well, he was one of the people that was a network administrator, so he worked with the technical side of Cassini.
Yeah, computer specialist for all the specific computers that NASA was using. And in that, like, I tried to downplay it at first, where I was like, he's like a systems administrator.
He's a systems administrator.
It's probably like if your mouse driver needed reinstalling, he'd help you with that. But it's like, no, I imagine there's probably some very specific computer equipment that he was probably working with. So it's like, right. Legit space dude.
Legit space dude. And what happens in 2009... he loses his team lead status, and he gets let go after, you know, sort of like the mission lasting itself 15 years. Now, he claims that the reason that this happened is because he is he's a proponent of intelligent design, okay? And I don't just mean, like, he believes in it. If you do a little bit of digging on this guy, you'll realize that he actually owns a company that produced a DVD that DVDs. Actually, you and I watched this movie, the DVD that he put up. I'm trying to find the name. Hold on. It's the Unlocking the Mysteries of Life. I don't know if you remember that, but we watched it on Netflix for a little while, and it was like a growing consensus among scientists. And they always show like pictures of people near the beach or something like that, and they're like, people are some scientists are claiming or beginning to doubt the legitimacy of the blah, blah, blah.
That's what I love about Wikipedia, is it taught me about the concept of weasel words. Some scientists are saying this. A growing consensus of people believe this. Yeah. And Netflix is becoming a much, like, I don't know whether or not to be amused by this or disturbed, but if you dig through Netflix And it's not always, you know, how Netflix organizes things, so you basically at 75 out of a category and nothing more. If you dig deeper, though, there's a whole bunch of weird religious...
Well, there's a lot of religious material, actually, on Netflix.
There was one that was that's called Creatures That Disprove Evolution.
There's actually a series.
Yeah, like, there's three of them on Netflix, and I checked them out.
I think
out
it's a series of five, though. They'll probably put the other ones. But needless to say, like, ID documentaries are alive and well... on all fucking streaming media. They exist. I mean, you can watch the Unlocking the Mysteries of Life on Google Video.
Because they don't give a damn about, you know, making a ton of money off of it. They just want to get their message out.
Well, why would they? First of all, okay, that movie was made by a company called Illustra Media that was partially owned by the guy who's filing this lawsuit because he said he was dismissed because of his religious views. All right? And... I want to read, like, there are certain sections of the lawsuit itself that seem to really indicate, like, who is crafting this lawsuit itself? And before we talk about this, I have to mention the Discovery Institute, all right? We have to go back to this. Now, the Discovery Institute, its history begins in 1994, all right? It's essentially set up by a lawyer... who decides that the best way to try to essentially introduce God back into scientific classrooms to defeat materialism, all right? The view that understanding the natural world is through the power of science and observation, yeah, they despise this idea. They believe that this materialism leads to atheism. Which is actually pretty valid as an argument. But we'll deal with that another day. Anyways, their goal is primarily as an organization, when they get set up, is to influence public policy. Now, to give you an idea of, like, how do they rank? How does the Discovery Institute rank in terms of the stuff they do in terms of science? Because they try to, they try to say that their goal... at face value, is to promote critical thinking, right? To try to say, we're being fair towards all views. Science is about, you know, intellectual freedom. And in our view, there is no way to explain the universe or life without, relying on a creator, an intelligent designer, just a made-up word to essentially disguise creationism.
Yeah.
So... these guys, I mean, I can't quite stress how well-funded these people are. All right, to give you an idea, the people who fund them, they're rich multimillionaires, conservative Christians, who donate millions of dollars to foundations and groups that have the same values they do. Like, one of the major founders, I'm trying to find their name here, I'll tell you who it is Howard and Roberta Almanson.
You're still terrible.
It's like Ahmanson. How do I pronounce this? I don't even care anymore.
Let's just go with first names from now on. This is the first name show. Yeah. I'm Ryan. This is Jake. That's like
no last names.
No last names ever. I don't even want to pronounce
the other names. Like there's one guy called Philip and Schultz. I don't even know how to pronounce that. Right. And Richard Mellon Scaife. I don't know how to pronounce these names, but these are wealthy conservative evangelicals that donate money to causes. Like, give you an example, the Howard and Roberta, whatever name I can't pronounce.
Sure, Howard and Roberta
donated $1.4 million of their own money for the Prop 8 advertising campaign. You remember the constitutional amendment to remove the rights of individuals to marry?
Yep.
Yeah. They donated $1.4 million. I want to give you an idea of how much money they probably donate to the Discovery Institute, because that's not really open. They don't really open their books to that shit. They're just like, we donate to them. Screw you. You'll never know how much money you really get.
You'll never know.
You'll never know. But the point is, like, this well-funded organization, their goal is basically... if you want to understand the organization, you read something called the Wedge Strategy. All right, this was devised, I think, in 2005. I'm not quite sure when it was devised. But anyway,
Discovery that were the ones that were kind of like, it was their paperwork where they found, like, it was listed in the Wedges what we're going to be up to?
Yep, Yep, that's the it was started by the founder of it, which is a lawyer by the name of Philip Johnson. And Philip Johnson basically said, like, if we want to change if we want to reintroduce God back into science, what we have to do is, number one, undermine scientific education. So what you do is you leverage the fact that the majority of Americans, it's not a huge majority, but it's still a majority of Americans, are distrustful of science, are fairly uneducated, like I would say to the point of second world nations in terms of education and knowledge about the rest of the world. So they're not very knowledgeable, and they already have a distrust of science based on a variety of reasons. It could be medical. It could be because it conflicts with their religious beliefs. It could be all kinds of things. But nevertheless, there is a general distrust of science. So the idea behind the wedge strategy is that you need to appeal to the public and make their distrust of science erode scientific education. So and part of what they do is that they work closely with school boards in America. Like, if you remember the Dover, Pennsylvania trial,
mm-hmm.
Well, they were the advisors for the school board at the time to introduce their creationist materials. It starts with them introducing stickers which says that the theory of evolution is open to debate. And then it moves to bringing in creationist material, which is mainly their little book called Of Pandas and People, which used to be a creationist book, which was later re-edited to change the words creationism to intelligent design and the word God to intelligent creator to essentially make it seem as though it was being fair and objective.
A bit more universal to all religions.
Yeah.
So they could be like, yeah, it was Allah that did this, or Krishna.
Right, and even in the Dover trial, like, one of the most interesting things about the trial is that you can see the progression of how creationists become intelligent designers and the way that basically just flies. And the wedge strategy, again, like I said before, I mean, part of the public... trying to engineer the public opinion and in terms of swaying them towards creationism. The second part of it is to try to use the law to bring in creationism in classrooms. And that brings us to something in 2001 that some people may remember but most people won't, called the Santorum Amendment, which was an amendment that was proposed by, Rick Santorum, essentially written by Philip Johnson and the Discovery Institute, that was trying to, include itself in the No Child Left Behind bill, of saying that they wanted to, teach the controversy. They wanted to include intelligent design in the classroom. And what happened is that by the time that the Santorum, amendment came over, a bunch of scientists and rational people said, this is all kinds of bullshit, you need to defeat it. And the Santorum Amendment was defeated. But the victory of the creationists was that they were able to allow some of the wording of the original amendment in the history of the bill. Like, all amendments and bills have a kind of a history to them, right? So that you can trace what wording and what people were trying to say. Okay, well, because they were able to keep some of their creationist bullshit in there, they've used this to try to argue that there are legal justifications to allow intelligent design. They're like, well, the Santorum Amendment shows that intelligent design should be introduced, even though it was defeated, even though it never went into effect. But because the language of it was included in the amendment, they used this as a fucking leverage point to convince school boards and other groups to introduce creationist material and convincing them that this is legal. And this is what the Discovery Institute does. They use the law to try to introduce it. And I mean, the Santorum Amendment was part of it, but this new lawsuit is another attempt to try to reintroduce intelligent design. So the argument here is that CopEdge was fired or let go because he was proselytizing his materials and his views at work And they were like, this is why we were actually let go. This is why we were demoted from team lead status. And he has a whole list of complaints saying, like, I was, my psychology was damaged because my supervisors told me to no longer introduce that. They were accusing me of religiously proselytizing. Meanwhile, I'm arguing that this is a valid scientific theory. So they're still trying to bring in this whole notion, even in the lawsuit itself.
Yeah.
And now what's funny is that Caltech itself, which is involved in the lawsuit because NASA's not involved, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is managed by Caltech, God, it feels so complicated saying this, but yeah, they're in the lawsuit, and they said basically the reason he was let go is because the Cassini project was over. The fucking spaceship was out there 15 years after. It was like there were 265 other people that got let go.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is. But how many of those 265 people think they can make a legitimate case for being fired based on the idea of religious freedom? Because this is what he's arguing. He's arguing that he didn't make any qualms about being an evangelical Christian, that the scientific establishment was basically hound-dogging him because they were like, oh, you're a bunch of Darwinists and you're going to just knock down anyone who has any intelligent design arguments because you're big meanies. And I didn't have a career advancement because of these views.
Well, didn't the lawsuit come into effect after he was demoted, and then just the firing was kind of the cherry on the sundae? Because I remember they were saying basically that he was demoted from team leader because he was not getting along with
There are many complaints from people within the group. I mean, like, you can even read it in the transcript of, like, in his his suit. He mentions is like many times he was approached by supervisors who were like, we've received complaints from him, from other employees who said that they were uncomfortable with your political views and you proselytizing at work. And he's trying to argue that this is my freedom. I have the ability to do this.
And the funny thing about it is
he actually doesn't.
One of his views is that, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. I can just imagine if you happen to be, you know, a homosexual that works with him, or just somebody who's...
Who has a family member who's gay, which is everyone.
Yeah.
Really?
So at that point, it kind of crosses over, and this is where I always say, it's always interesting when religious people try to claim that they have a right to be publicly racist because their religion allows them to be so. And I say, look, you know, you can display those attitudes as much as you want. But people think you're a piece of shit because of it, don't be surprised.
Yeah, and if they fire your ass because you don't get along with everybody else who has a really solid view of the universe, as opposed to you, I mean, like, here's the embarrassing thing. I remember this one quote. I wanted to read it to you. This is actually in the court filing. It says, consistent with the goal of JPL's, Jet Propulsion Laboratory's space exploration missions, plaintiff has sincere interest in the scientific evidence behind life's origin, an interest that led to an appreciation of intelligent design as a theory supported by empirical scientific evidence that life and the existence of the universe derive not from undirected material processes, but from an intelligent cause. So allow me to translate lawyer speak and just go into Jake speak now. It says that the plaintiff doesn't actually really think that his goals were at all interfering with Jet Propulsion Laboratories because, like, I believe in life, too, and I think that magic did it rather than the natural processes. And I'm surprised that my intellectual credibility would be influenced by me believing in magic. Like, at the end of the day, even if they fired him for that cause, the problem is that, number one, they're a private organization. They can do whatever the fuck they want. And if you're an ignorant fucko that's trying to sell everyone a DVD from a company you partially own, that's interfering with your fucking work. And if I really, like, even when I read the transcripts of just saying, like, I was trying to be really respectful, and because of that, I felt emotionally damaged. It's like, if your employer tells you to keep your political and religious shit at home, and you don't obey that, and you feel like there's some kind of emotional stress, why don't you fucking quit and work somewhere where that's not a stress? Huh? Because honestly, like, it's not working out.
Sometimes I wonder whether or not, you know, if we turn this around and we said that this was an atheist working in a workplace where there are a bunch of religious people, and because the atheist had certain beliefs and was involved in the atheist community, then they would deserve you know, whatever they got from these religious people.
But in a weird sense, like if a person got fired from a private business, my whole thing is that I would have a problem. I don't want government coming in and telling these organizations how to function. Like the same way that I remember one person actually invited me to this group to suggest that we should ban Facebook groups that deny the Holocaust. Let me be clear about something. Never fucking send me any groups to ban free speech. I don't care how vile it is. If you send me this, you have no fucking idea what free speech is, okay? You personally embarrass me. We may share certain things in common, like a revulsion for people who deny the Holocaust, but we do not share the fucking view of how we should deal with that issue, okay? My view is shame them. Your view is silence them. I don't like your fucking views. Don't invite me to your bullshit groups.
Coming from people who are one really bad joke away from having people say that we should be silenced, I can agree with that.
Well, there are certain instances where there's a fantastic LA Times article that I tweeted about. It'll be in the notes that talks about there is really an assault on freedom of speech in industrialized nations, because we have really accepted this notion coming from the religious fundamentalists that speaking out against religion should be criminalized because there are negative consequences to that. People get killed. People get hurt when we speak against those things. That's not us doing it. That's the religious people doing it. And they're like, you should silence these atheists because they're making us kill people. And I'm like, why don't you fuck off?
How about you not kill people, you motherfuckers? How about this? Have you heard? You heard about it in Iraq? They're killing emo kids, right?
No.
There's a situation where it's a government wing that put out an edict basically saying that anybody who's listening to this kind of music, who's dyeing their hair, who's dressing up like emo, like straight up, like, you know, what we used to joke about 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, when we watched Spider-Man 3 and we thought, what the hell?
When My Chemical Romance was out, everything else like that. Like
they're always a little bit
Iraqis
behind.
Who are starting to be fashionable, and basically this edict says you better step away from this satanic way of living, or basically the Mujahideen are going to come from you. The holy warriors of Islam have a right to do whatever they so desire with you. And since that's happened, there's been kids turning up dead with their skulls smashed in. Like,
Jesus.
Because what basically happens is, obviously, when the government says something like this, all of a sudden anybody with any crazy motherfucker...
Any anger, any young man that wants to just smash skulls in because he's frustrated, confused, and...
Full of holy fervor.
And given, you know, basically a carte blanche by the government to smash the skulls of anyone that that crosses his path that he doesn't like.
Death toll is officially up around a dozen people. The big question is whether or not this is because of that edict or because of, as the Iraq government claims, specific, like, just cases of criminality where it's like people murdered these people for other reasons unrelated to the big notice
saying
they should be murdered.
What are the odds? Well, it just turned out that they got killed coincidentally.
And it's just one of those cases where you're like, how about you not murder teenagers, you fucking children? Like, how pathetic do you have to be? It's kind of like these cases where guys throw acid in women's faces. What kind of pathetic motherfucker do you have to be to do that kind of shit?
Well, it's weird because I've been really trying to empathize with the actions of people who I consider inhumane. Like, what drives them to make those kinds of actions? And honestly, I can come up with nothing better than to say that there is an existing institution that allows them to behave in that way. Because individual behavior is, you know, like, if one person was just going out and doing that crazy shit, we would take care of that pretty fast. But as soon as you have an institution that's placed with it, and especially when you have an institution that is apparently above all laws, because it claims that it's like, we're the divine arbiters of all laws. Yeah. What are the odds that this type of organization would abuse its powers? Gee, I wonder. What a fucking surprise.
It's so dangerous when you have people who have such a certainty that everything that they believe is 100% correct and all the decisions that they make lead us to a better world, while the other person, whoever is in the other side of this equation, is the one that's dragging the world down, which is the reason why God is angry, which is the reason why everything is such shit.
Well, they'll always, I mean, you could always find a reason why things aren't great, because guess what? When are things going to be all good, right? But when you think about the way that people deal with these kinds of issues, and most of the time it's like, let's blame an invisible agent angry by issues that I personally feel are issues. Has there ever been a time where a person heard the voice of God and it didn't fundamentally disagree with what they believed? What a coincidence! God believes everything I do. Gee, that was really convenient. I didn't have to really change my mind about anything. I didn't have to go through some kind of very painful introspection. No, just God said, hey, everything you're doing is A-okay.
And what those other guys do, you should kill them. Or you should do something. You should scapegoat them. And, you know, it's weird. Scapegoating is something that I think about a lot. In the way that religions kind of deal with dissent. And it applies not just in situations like you know, what you're seeing in America against the gays and against any of those other minorities that are not following God's words, but also as well just going down into crazy religious people and exorcisms as well, because you just have this general idea of a problem and you need to do something to it.
Well, speaking of exorcism, I think that if you don't know what I'm talking about, I want to, right now, I'm going to include some choice fucking audio that I want you to hear from this troupe, this trio of young girls who are claiming to be exorcists. And we're going to play that right now. I'm going to play the 30 seconds of, like, the most insane shit that they're about to say.
Yes, my first exorcism was in a church in Africa. Dad was up on stage working with somebody, and then all of a sudden he turned and looked at me and said, Bryn, why don't you cast this demon out?
I want to do this because it really helps people. My family and I came to this ministry about 3 years ago, and we just saw the transformation in our lives just by ministering to people, and we saw the difference in hurting people's lives, and it was inspiring. It really convinced us to do this.
And you say your first exorcism that you were involved with was actually on a friend of yours.
We were just at a sleepover, and she started talking to us about, you know, she had been a really strong Christian. She'd wandered away from God, and the devil had gotten some hooks in her.
There's plenty of people who have issues in their lives or problems or unhappy. How do you know it's demonic possession?
At that point, I had been going through training for about a year, so I kind of knew what to look for. She was experiencing a terrible splitting headache for no apparent reason. And one of the telltale signs of demonic possession that Hollywood gets right is the eyes. The pupils dilate sporadically, and I know that can be kind of a common thing, but when it's demonic possession, it is sporadic dilations, extractions very quickly, and you look in someone's eyes, and after seeing training, you can see the evil.
Here's the thing. I wasn't sure at the end of actually watching this video what I was more frightened of, okay? Let's deal with the first problem. Number one, I don't know, where they mentioned performing exorcisms in Africa. Now, I don't know if many of you have seen videos that I've posted of Africa and the results of superstition over there. But, you know, this is people being buried alive, children being beaten to death, because they're suspected of harboring demons.
There's a guy who got a machete right to the face because he had a home away from everybody else where kids who were thought to be possessed by demons could come rather than being murdered.
Stepping stones. It's like a fucking charity. Like, oh my God.
And he needed like there was some kind of fundraiser so that he could build a wall to protect himself and these children from all the crazy motherfuckers who are like, let's go burn down the demon house.
Yeah. So here's the first thing that scares me. In Africa, one of the most terrifying things is the conflation of Western religion with African primitive, animist religions, where they have many superstitions that are compatible with Christianity's view of the world. And unfortunately, because of the way that Christianity views those superstitions, mainly, do not suffer a witch to live, it's a very fucking important passage for people over there where they believe that witchcraft is a salient power that influences things. from crops to fertility to even the size of your dick. Like, you accusing someone of stealing your erection, you know? And all of a sudden, that person will be burned alive. Like, the things that we talked about in medieval Europe, witches being burned and that kind of stuff, yeah, that's what is going on right now. And these young girls who have a father who's obviously a master of nonsense, who manages to convince them that what they're doing is the right thing, go to Africa and just continue to perpetuate the most dangerous and deadly myths that you could possibly imagine. And meanwhile, in the video, I mean, I really wish you could see this, they're all like looking at each other, agreeing, yeah, this is great, yeah, we're doing God's work, this is so powerful and awesome.
Yeah, this was the clip from Anderson Cooper's new show. He's like the new Oprah, apparently.
Yeah, Anderson Cooper's I Don't Ask Tough Questions show.
I know, I was like, why the fuck do you not call them out for all of the deaths that are caused by these quote-unquote...
By this dangerous fucking practice, thank you very much.
I think it was just a week ago that, like, 150 kilometers south of Seoul in Korea, they found this Korean preacher and his wife. They murdered their three kids, exercising them.
That's nice.
Yep. Starved them, beat them, and they all died.
There's a bunch of, actually, stories that sometimes I don't even cover because there's too many of deadly exorcism. There was this one kid who was also suffocated performing a similar exorcism ritual. There are serious consequences to that shit. But, I mean, that's not the only thing that I found creepy. The other thing in the video that I found creepy is the fact that they talk about one of their non-believer friends that came over. And they're like, oh yeah, we performed an exorcism on them. It was so great. And at one point, Anderson asked the only fucking pertinent question the entire time, was like, how did you know that this person was possessed? Congratulations, you asked a tough question. Their answer was like, well, by that time, I had a whole year's worth of training in nonsense, so of course I was able to determine the difference between a person having a bad day and a person being in the literal hooks of Satan.
Yeah, it really creeps me out how... you got to look at these as these people are basically in their own little bubbles. And the things that develop and happen in these bubbles, these disturbing things where they literally believe that the devil is inside of people, spiritual warfare going on, Satan is not just real, but he enters your body and changes your behavior, affects everything around you, and brings everything down. These are very dangerous ideas to perpetuate, because if you believe that, like, 100%, no, like, 50-50 rationalizing or anything else like that, if you're 100% into that idea, I mean, where do those ideas lead you? What actions could you take?
Where do you draw the line in fighting Satan? Like, where do they say, oh, that was a bit too far in my combat against supernatural monsters?
Trying to save this person's soul. In which case, even their living body isn't really all that high on the priority level.
I saved their soul. I mean, why do you think so many women were burned during the witch hunts? And it was because everyone felt that that's how you save their soul. And the weird thing about why immolation was used as a tactic is actually because of a biblical passage that says that you should not shed their blood. So the response was to cook them, because there's no blood shedding from cooking. You understand the kind of fucked up shit you just come up with when you just listen to nonsense where that's the basis of your reality? Oh, I based my whole world on the Bible. Oh, great. That should make you do some really nice moral things. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah, it's quite scary that there are people out there like that. It's always creepy. I mean, you put up that Santorum video of those chicks singing that song, and I was always kind of wondering, like, who supports this creepy guy who doesn't want anybody having sex or doing anything that God says no to? And all of a sudden, you see these, like, 16 and an 18-year-old girl who are 100% behind Rick Santorum and everything that he says, and all of the restrictions that he would place on other women, and you're like, that's fucked up. It's kind of like in the Middle East. The biggest purveyors of the abuse of women and the subjugation of women is often the
young, young women.
Past that, the mothers of the husbands. The mother-in-law.
Well, I say this story all the time because I feel like it's a good one, is that my sister had this one turning point in her quest for feminist, because my older sister has always been someone who's like, when there's a trend, she will get behind it if it's like worthy enough. And she felt like feminism was a worthy cause. Who's not going to feel that way? I mean, is the plight of women over in the world? No, like, not even fucking close. Like, International Women's Day was a week ago, and barely got a fucking mention from mainstream media. And meanwhile, the plight of women around the world is a really serious issue. Like, what the fuck?
Meanwhile, we're debating about whether or not women should have access to contraception.
Yay! Still in America, where yes. This is the fucking number one conversation, where, you know, I'm having to choose whether or not I should do shows about women's rights when that's all America's talking about. I feel stupid not talking about it. I'm like, yeah, that's what everyone cares. I mean, it doesn't even matter. Everything else was like, is your comedy doing fine? Shut the fuck up. I don't care. Women are having sex.
Is religion responsible for this? Yeah, just a little. It wouldn't be brought up and it wouldn't be going on right now if it wasn't for fucking religion. It's hard really to ignore the blame on this one. Yeah, religion isn't divisive at all. Religion isn't anti-women. Religion isn't anti-gay. That's just a really stupid way of looking at it, you narrow, evil atheists with your agendas.
It's funny that you mention agendas because, about a week ago, or maybe more than a week ago, people will remember that I put up a show with an interview with a group that was trying to put up a documentary about sex in evangelical religions, because I think that they recognized, even as evangelicals, even as believers, because I think the people I interviewed, I mean, they believe in God.
Yeah.
But what they really don't understand is that the sexual issues that they want to make a movie about is predicated entirely on a view that's essentially spread by their own religion, which is basically an unhealthy analysis and view of sexuality. And I'm not surprised. I'm like, you know what? Early Christians were probably the people that had the most fucked up view of sex and marriage in the history of all religions. Like, they were all about Jesus coming back any day now. It was like, don't even marry, don't fucking worry about that shit. Celibacy is best. I mean, think about how many religions would survive with that message. That's the stupidest message in the world. Don't fuck. It's a pretty good way to make sure that you don't spread your word. But then something weird happens to Christianity right around like the 4th century. They become adopted by the world power at the time. Whoops. That kind of changed things. I mean, imagine if all of a sudden the U.S. government decided that Wicca was the next religion. Yeah. What kind of fucking influence would that have? Well, here's the weird thing. I mean, like, people who discuss sexual mores or morality, these are people that are they're the remnants of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire. I mean, like, if you read Revelations in the Bible, all of that is to say that the Roman Empire is basically going to die, Nero is going to fucking go and burn in hell, and meanwhile, Christianity is actually survives because it makes a deal with the devil. With the fucking very empire it says will crumble under its feet. I'm like, that's pretty sick and twisted. And the consequence of this is that every church father from the early times up till Tertullian or even St. Augustine, has a distrust of women and sex in general. They're like, chastity is best.
Well, look, we all understand what that inside fuck? Us exists a jealous
whore?
Asshole. And religion gives that jealous asshole unfettered ability to act on his every whim to subjugate women. It's what you see in Muslim societies all the time. keep women inside, keep them covered up, don't let other men see them, don't let them interact with other men.
Control your females.
Keep them pure. They can only be for their husbands and no one else. It's all jealous assholism, and it's like we're programmed to be that way to a certain degree because I'm sure there's some kind of stupid evolutionary advantage towards being a dick face like that. It's probably the same reason you got lions or you got your main male who gets to fuck all and then the other ones
and
don't
get
none. And then
eat the babies of the other males?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's all sorts of, I'm sure, evolutionary reasons why we are this way, but we should not deny the fact that these are stupid, primitive urges that we need to get rid of and just that are just no longer useful.
Well, let me ask you, as a male, do you want to eat the babies of the females that you date that don't belong to you genetically?
I don't know. I love chicken eggs, but female humans don't really lay the same kind of dealio.
Well, let's say that I would say that for the benefit of our species, imitating cruel, violent models of the natural world is probably not the best place to start. Yeah? Are we agreed?
Yeah, that whole it's not natural thing. I'm like, natural isn't always good.
Now, cyanide is natural. It has a really bad influence on your body.
Natural was like back when 3 out of 5 children died of polio or other various diseases on their way up. That was quote-unquote natural. So I'm all for making existence as unnatural as possible.
Sure. I mean, we're all about artificial selection. We artificially select ourselves. We artificially select the food that we eat. I mean, you would not have a banana were it not for the fact that we cloned that bitch. I mean, honestly,
now come on,
speaking,
Jake. God is banana's way of saying he loves us.
The ironic thing about that is that like in 50 years,
damn it.
In 50 years, the banana may not even exist anymore. Won't that be funny?
You take that back.
I mean, it's a clone of a clone, and there is a very... Here's the problem with all clones. This is the reason why successful species don't clone, is that when a virus or a fungus or any other life... parasitic life form adapts to your whole little sort of like genetic structure shit, unless you mix it up, you're fucked. And bananas are fucked because they can't mix it up. We can't breed bananas because they're mutants. A banana is a goddamn mutant that we keep cloning. I mean, I'm telling you, in 100 years you won't know what a banana is. Do you know why you can't get a banana-flavored Mr. Freeze anymore is? Because bananas are slowly dying. They're slowly becoming extinct. I'm sorry to say.
I just figured...
Enjoy the bananas while you can.
Banana-flavored Mr. Freeze's sounds disgusting.
Oh, my God. It was
so
good.
What color would that be?
Yellow.
Like a yellowy, peachy color?
Yeah, you know what the yellow Mr. Freeze has turned into? Lime and lemon. That's worse than banana. You would agree? It tastes like... You know what it tastes like? It tastes like Mr. Clean is fucking your mouth. That's what a Mr. Freeze tastes like now. That's yellow. Don't eat a yellow Mr. Freeze.
I'm a white supremacist when it comes to Mr. Freezes.
You only eat the cream soda?
Is that cream soda?
Yeah.
That's funny because I hate cream soda in any other format.
But it's the same taste, you stupid idiot. Like, why don't you just take cream soda and freeze it? You would have like 2 liters of Mr. Freeze. You could have, like, a spoonful of deliciousness from just, like,
It's one of those things where, you know, that sounds like the kind of thing my mom would recommend to me. It's like, why do you need to do it like this? Just do it like this. And I'm like, no, you just don't get it. It's got to be in Mr. Freeze format. Otherwise, it's just not the same.
So you're telling me...
I put the cream soda in the freezer, and now you can have a delicious thing of cream syrup mush.
What the fuck are you calling me here? Are you saying I'm your mom here?
I'm just saying that it's not very practical, and it's stupid, and I won't do that.
Put a fucking container of cream soda in the freezer. You're right. It's the least practical thing I've ever said to you in my life.
Oh, yeah, it's totally practical. That's why so many people do it. And why Mr. Freeze sales are so low. It's a good idea. I think you should take that on Dragon's Den. see what the people think Dragon's about that Den. Idea. It's just
is anyone
like,
going to know what that reference is? Because that's pretty Canadian.
No, there's an American version.
Is that really now?
Yeah.
Dragon's Den?
Absolutely.
Shit.
Actually, I think they might have changed the name to like the something chamber.
I like Chamber.
Yeah.
Because Dragon's Den sounds too nerdy.
Well, Dragon's Den doesn't tell you at all what the fuck the show is all about. It's a show where you go on and you tell people you're stupid and
no, in the Dragon's Den, you show up there with the sword, you defeat the dragon, and you have, like, you rescue the princess. That's the Dragon's Den, right?
In the television show, you go and you pitch your stupid business idea, and they rip you a new one, or they give you money.
I think I want to go on there and tell them what my idea is and see what they say.
It would be enjoyable. I think you could probably make it. The producers would be like, let's get this
let's
guy.
Let's just go for it.
Let's put this guy on and see what happens.
Okay, well, you know what? I think we're going to wrap up the show with that. I'd like to remind everyone that if you're listening to this now, you are still in the Save the Good Atheist campaign, all right? We have not saved this puppy. The people that are like, I'm so glad you figured out your financial situation, Jacob. I want to hit you in the face with a brick. This is not figured out here. Shut the fuck up. It's figured out when you pay for shit. That's when it's figured out. That's when you become a patron. You go and you sign up. There's a special deal. This is going to end in March, like the $30 to get your membership renewed and to order the pre-order the book with the audiobook version of it. That's $30. That offer ends at the end of March. So don't pull me of you figured shit out card yet. We ain't figured nothing out. When I'm still eating ramen noodles, nothing has been figured out. So it's up to you guys. You are my support network. And if you're still sort of like saying, I don't want to give you any money, then you go to the site and click the like button to everything I do. Seriously. Like, this is the sharing the shit the good atheist does revolution. Like, you have to do this all the time now.
You'd be surprised how important it is to just get a little bit of momentum going when it comes to, like, sharing and tweeting media. If you don't have any money to share, then, like, if you could just share a little bit of clicky click.
It goes so far. You have no idea, because it's not just about you liking it. It's that, in a sense, when you do that, your entire passive network has the opportunity to like my shit. Like, that's your job now.
Or how about this? If you're on one of those atheism forums, just create a thread.
Yeah. Hey, this is a really good podcast. I like this show, blah, blah, blah.
Have you guys heard of these assholes?
They're fucking assholes, but listen to their show, these assholes. That's your new message. That's what
all
you
that
with.
Stuff helps immensely.
So
you can
huge.
Make a difference. Coney 2012, you can make a difference. Click like. It makes the difference.
This is why I'm still so much behind their fucking campaign, because I'm like, everything that I've ever done wrong, they've done right. Like, I'm just like,
well, one of the things that they've done right is that they take large amounts of money from Christian groups. So, unfortunately, we are not...
Unheardable fucking cats. Yeah. Congratulations, we're the unheardables.
And whenever something positive comes up, rather than, recognize the good, we say, hey, it's not perfect. This isn't exactly everything that I think it should be, and therefore nothing
I will not given. Support it, I and I will instead keyboard warrior it, and I feel like I'm doing something. Look... There's a time for conscientious objecting, and let me tell you something, it's not coming from you, odds are. Like, you're not the final dissenting voice, you're just another troll. That's what you are by then. So, yeah, what can I say? All I can say is that negativity is actually a thing of 2011. We gotta get on the positive bandwagon, people. That's why liking my shit is so important.
There's no dislike button, man.
Actually, no, that's the unfortunate thing. Every day...
Well, there is on YouTube.
Every once in a while, there is someone who's going to dislike our shit. But I'm like, don't do that.
That's okay. That's okay. You're allowed to dislike it. You're allowed to say and do whatever you want. But just the people that do like it, you know? I know there's a lot of you. You're all listening to it.
So many of you. And you're so lazy. Come on. Go and like
stuff.
The shit.
Share some stuff.
Don't make me slap you.
It's awesome. It seemed a bit negative there. It's a bit 2011.
I know. You're right. I'm so positive. All right, well, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.